ABC Radio.
You're listening to Nightlife.
Nightlife with Philip Clark.
Tonight on Nightlife News Breakdown, Anna Henderson is Chief Political Correspondent with SBS World News. Anna, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
A couple of things on tonight. One of the big ones, of course, the situation in Alice Springs. Now, the Prime Minister, Mr. Albanese, said he'll act as soon as possible after receiving this highly anticipated report on alcohol restrictions and ongoing unrest in the town. The report has been handed, we understand, to the government, but hasn't been released. Is there any information on what it might contain?
So at this stage, we haven't been able to see the report. We know that the Territory Government has a copy of it and it was being handed to the Prime Minister and the Minister for Indigenous Australians later this evening, and that the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory is en route to Canberra to have face-to-face talks with the Prime Minister tomorrow. Jarrell Anderson, the controller who's been tasked with putting this report together, only had really a week to compile this initial document. And while the Prime Minister is saying that there needs to be immediate action, the Northern Territory Government is saying they don't want to see knee-jerk reactions. So it's quite a tightrope that needs to be walked here in terms of dealing with what's become just an extraordinary crisis in the town of Alice Springs and the surrounding town camps and some of the communities, at the same time as not adding another problem for the community to deal with by potentially putting in place draconian restrictions that might not potentially have an impact on the violence and the antisocial behaviour that's taking place in the town. It's a really challenging area of policy, and one I think where we're now seeing a lot of discussion around just the alarm that had been raised in the months and years leading up to now. It does seem that there were people in the community who really were raising concerns about the situation, and those concerns may not have been heard at a federal level.
Hmm. That's right. I mean, it's easy to see this as, oh, well, you know, here's a simple thing, turn off the grog. And if it was that simple, I suppose, then, you know, everyone would do this. You'd expect this report, I imagine, to say, well, let's turn it off in some way or restrict it. But it appears there's a whole lot more that needs to happen here. And it's not all the federal government's responsibility, is it?
No, and certainly when you speak privately to people within the federal government who are dealing with this now, they're very much pointing to what the Northern Territory government's responsibility should have been in the wake of the changes of legislation last year. It's a really tricky policy area, and one where I think we're just seeing now just how much it can be sometimes simplified into a problem of alcohol, you know. So let's continue the takeaway alcohol bans, which were urgently put in place last week, for example, for 2 days a week. But if you're not dealing with the trauma that might have led people to turn to alcohol to try and deal with other things that are going on in their lives, poverty, lack of a job, intergenerational problems that have stemmed back to stolen generations issues. You know, there are so many other reasons why people might be drinking and becoming alcoholics. So that's one element to consider. And the other one that when I was speaking to the mayor today and a couple of the Indigenous leaders in the town are really raising as a great issue of concern is child protection, because you're seeing a lot of young people on the streets, some with weapons, not necessarily wanting to go home. So while there's this alcohol discussion happening and a report on potential policy changes that need to be put in place to give more space to deal with the broader issues, there's also a big child protection issue here. And apparently one of my colleagues at the National Indigenous TV Service was telling me that there are dozens of children over the last 2 months who've been taken essentially into out-of-home care.
Yeah.
And that's the opposite of what the Close the Gap process is trying to do. So we are definitely seeing in Alice Springs right now a town that is trying to deal with the problems that are unfolding, and there are urgent ones and there are long-term ones, and a report completed in a single week about alcohol policy is just going to be one element of what possibly needs
exactly.
to change here.
Quite frankly, pardon the pun, a drop in the ocean, it does seem. And here, I mean, a lot of listeners will think, here we go again and probably thump the table in frustration saying, yes, these are exactly all the same problems that led to the Howard era government intervention, which, you know, there was such disagreement and controversy about. But here we are, the same issues that kids roam the streets in part because they've got nothing to do, but in many cases because they're they're afraid to go home because homes aren't safe, and that, you know, this is a factor of the lack of housing policy. It's a lack of, you know, community management. It's a lack of Aboriginal communities themselves to step up. It's a lack of the Northern Territory government to get involved. You know, the best wisdom seems to be, look, the three parties, the Aboriginal communities, the Northern Territory government and the federal government, need to sit down in a considered way and map out something that is going to work here. Because, frankly, the last lot hasn't worked. And, you know, there's no evidence that just banning the grog this time is going to work either. As one policeman said, we can't arrest our way out of this problem.
And I think the extra police presence on the streets over the last week and those initial additional alcohol restrictions in place in Alice Springs are not designed to potentially be a solution here, but just to give a reprieve. So some of the groups that need to hopefully sit at that table and have that conversation are not in a state of ongoing chaos, which I'm told the town is experiencing at the moment in terms of break-ins, in terms of danger on the streets, in terms of there just being very little space for the critical groups working on the front line to actually even be able to take a breather to kind of think about what the solutions might be. I've worked in Alice Springs previously and been a reporter there. A lot of these issues have been there for decades, and the intervention didn't necessarily make the changes that government hoped for. There is so much focus now on Indigenous-led, First Nations-led consultations and genuine amplification of the voice of Indigenous groups here. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not we do see a different, perhaps more considered approach with less federal bureaucracy, perhaps from Canberra or from Darwin at a territory level, if that means that we do see changes here that are positive.
Yeah, well, exactly. Let's hope. Well, the past experience, as I say, it doesn't teach you to be optimistic in the circumstances. All right.
Phil, just to sort of close off, one thing that I did notice in the conversation over the last week is it just goes against all the closing the gap recommendations and all of the progress. It's the opposite direction, and to see a town like Alice Springs in Central Australia, which there are so many well-intentioned people who've moved to that area, who are working as police, as medicos, in the education system, First Nations and non-Indigenous people who've made that decision, they'll be the first people to leave now, and then the support structures will not necessarily be there to help implement the changes, no matter what reports are made. So it is a real dangerous spiral that the community is dealing with.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Yeah, absolutely is. Anna Henderson's our guest tonight on Nightlife News Breakdown, Chief Political Correspondent with the SBS World News. On to defence matters, Anna. You've been closely monitoring a couple of defence-related issues. First up, the Defence Minister Richard Marles and Foreign Minister Penny Wong's visit to France and the UK. It seems we've patched things up with the French.
Still mentioned it.
It's all,
but they didn't really.
It's all en force. It's all, yes, allay with France again, which is also good. We apparently, well, there was a defence agreement we're making. Are we making shells for Ukraine, or we're helping France make shells for Ukraine? What is it?
So the breakdown is that the French are going to manufacture these artillery shells and Australia will provide the gunpowder. So that's the agreement that's been made, and they'll be sent to Ukraine to assist in their efforts to fight in the war. And I think in the press conference there was sort of reference to that which shall not be named, which of course is the background to this and the shredding of that submarine deal. But it does seem like things are on a better track, and France was also lending its support to Australia in conjunction with Pacific Nations in its pitch for the 2026 COP31 climate conference. So backing Australia on an international stage on that front, it certainly does seem that it's all moving in a positive direction, which Australia will be happy about, with the EU free trade agreement talks still ongoing as well.
Yeah, well, it's positive. We don't want to be fighting with the French. They've got plenty of other people to fight. Not us, I imagine. Anna, you also went to a briefing regarding the US involvement with Australia, the Marines in Darwin, and the common threats we face here. What do you take from this?
Well, we did have this memo which was publicised over the course of the weekend, which was from an American Air Force officer sort of predicting the likelihood of conflict between China and potentially in the Pacific region within a matter of 2 years. So there was the pretext to this briefing we had with the US Marine Corps Commandant General David Berger was to understand more about what the US is doing to engage with Australian military. But of course, the top of our list of questions was to try and understand what his take as a really another really senior member of the US military was on that extraordinary prediction that within, you know, 24 months we could be in a conflict situation. And it was very sobering to hear his assessment, which was that despite the Chinese president engaging with Western countries and a sense that after the attempt to broker defence pacts in the Pacific, that there does appear to be somewhat of a reduction in the temperature in the region, that that's not the way the US military sees it. They're still full steam ahead in terms of preparing for a conflict, doing everything they can to try and avoid it. And his quote was that we need to use, you know, everything in the cupboard to prepare and avoid conflict. So in terms of what's ahead for the region, and also a reason why the American military presence is still so strong in the north of Australia, they're clearly wanting to make it known to the media that they're expecting things to continue to be very challenging, and that it is, without being an open conflict, very much a build-up of military training and resources around this area on both sides.
And you get the sense that that's, and this is worries, I think worries a lot of Australians, I don't know what your impression you formed was, is that who's calling the shots here about Australia's involvement here? Or are we simply inexorably being drawn into this as a result of what US generals are planning?
And that is way beyond my pay grade, for sure, to give an assessment on that. But it is something that, what I would say from a journalistic perspective is obviously information to journalists is part of, it's part of the conflict in a way, or the pre-conflict situation, because it's intentionally providing information to journalists to report on to the public is part of this process. In fact, that's something that the Commandant General even said in this briefing, that sometimes information about what's happening in the South China Sea or the Taiwan Strait, that there's no way a journalist could be physically present for, that is information and intelligence collected by military, will be put out there publicly for very much the purpose of raising public understanding of why some kind of military engagement would be necessary. So it was interesting to reflect on, even as we sat in the room for this briefing, how the media is very much a part of the engagement back and forth between countries like the US and Australia and the Chinese forces.
Indeed. Anna Henderson with us, Chief Political Correspondent with SBS World News. Just finally, Anna, you've met a very talkative chap, Mr. Beakey.
I wish I had personally met him. He does sound like an absolute riot. But this is actually a story from one of my colleagues at the National Indigenous TV Service, which was published tonight. And look, this is a bloke who's been around for a while. He's a blue budgie, which an Indigenous artist, Kathy Leatham, bought for, I think, $35 in East Gippsland, and then discovered that he, in fact, was speaking some words in Indigenous language.
Really?
And it's become this kind of extraordinary part of a sort of public advocacy and understanding in schools in parts of Victoria, where Mr. Beakey is attending schools and talking in language, and kids are getting really inspired and kind of connecting with that idea of the importance and value of Indigenous language as a result. So Mr. Beakey is obviously a very intelligent chap. We should all probably take a leaf out of his book.
Well, yeah, he was bought for $35 from a pet shop in East Gippsland, but I'll tell you what, he can speak, apparently, in Tongarong language. Here he is with Cassie Latham and Mr. Beakey, the blue budgie.
One little blue bird is, getting language out there. Everyone's got a different look. Everyone's got different, you know, coloured skin. Everyone's different and unique. Mr. Beakey, he's a blue budgie. but we're still all First Nations, and he's still a native to Australia, is he not? This all just happened because, you know, of him, you know, just picking up simple little words in language. Always say, if you're feeling blue, give Mr. Beaky a call, and, you know, we're happy to have a yarn to anybody and you know, make everyone's day a little bit brighter. What are you doing? Kisses?
I don't know, Amanda, whether I'm convinced the budgie's there or not. Anyway, I'll take Cassie Latham's word for it. All right.
Look, I think it's pretty impressive, and I don't think the radio is doing it quite justice. No. When you see the beak move, that's when you can you can understand the language.
Here he is. Here's Mr. Beaky on his own. Is that the budgie?
Look, the main thing I think is anything that can kind of be a point of connection as the idea of public advocacy around Indigenous language continues Fair to enough. Roll out can only be a good thing.
Very, very nicely said, Anna. Thank you. All right, Anna, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.